When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danny Meringue.
I found two empty bottles of a particularly decent Chateau Noir Bordeaux 57 in your rubbish.
Dusty Hera.
You went through my garbage?
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app.
I find it particularly offensive that you use them to wash down an order from something called Macho Taco.
And Portland's sports leader, 1080.
I would never drink a Bordeaux with a Macho Taco.
The Fan.
It was a burrito machissimo.
Hour number two, Danny and Dusty with you on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being part of our day, letting us be a part of yours, whether it is on 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan, or youtube.com/1080AM The Fan. Party on, you party animals over there on the YouTube stream, which is usually popping off right about this time. Let me check the chat. Oh, boy. Yep. Always getting sideways on the YouTube stream. Joining us now from Dusty and Danny in the mornings, which is not us. We're switched. We're Danny and Dusty. We're in the afternoons. Danny Cannell, courtesy of our friends at Bet Online. Go to Bet Online for updated college football playoff and bowl game lines. Danny, how you doing, man?
What's up, boys? How's it going, man? Congrats on the season for the Ducks, Big Ten champs. I mean, that was incredible first year in the Big Ten from them. Missed you guys at the Big Ten championship game at Indy, but it was fun. And now the real fun begins with the playoffs tomorrow night. I can't wait, man. I'm fired up to be on with you guys.
Look, they kept you guys like corralled over on the opposite sideline at the Big Ten championship game. I was trying to get over to where you guys had your set, but you guys, they broke that thing down, and you guys like vanished very quickly during the Big Ten championship game.
Well, we had sort of a that was the plan all along, because we weren't doing a post-game show. But I will say this, we had kind of a weird situation. We have two females that I work with. They're awesome. Jordan Giorgio and Mackenzie Brooks. Great girls, incredibly smart. They are attractive. And there was one guy that was kind of harassing them, so they did beef up the security a little bit. So I don't know how close you guys would have been. We should have like exchanged numbers or something, because I could have got you in there behind the scenes a little bit. But it was really cool. It was I tell you what, I don't know how you guys felt. What would you have put the percentage of Ducks fans? I mean, it felt like a Penn State home game. And Oregon, I knew it was going to be challenging because of what was upcoming and knowing they were going to be in the playoff. But that was a road environment for Oregon to play, and it didn't faze them one bit.
Yeah, I would say, like, I came back and I said it was 70-30, but I'd say it may have been closer to like 80-20. Yeah,
there was a lot of Penn State. My guess was 80-20. Yeah. And like, I'm buddies with, and this is, I don't want to sell him out because he might, you know, if it gets back to people, but he is a former Oregon Duck quarterback. But Tony Graziani, we're boys. Like, we played together in Atlanta, and I wanted to catch up with him. I said, hey, are you going to Indy for the Big Ten championship game? And he said what I think a lot of Oregon fans were thinking was, oh, we waited too long. We didn't get tickets. We're planning on going to the Rose Bowl. Like, so they're looking ahead, and which I like. That's the thing that sucks about, you know, the expanded playoffs. It's hard on fans, man. It's expensive for anyone, and to have to travel to Indy for a game that I know it's a Big Ten title, but it's not the prize that you're playing for. If I was a fan, I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
Not to knock Indy or anything, too, but I'd probably rather go to Pasadena than Indianapolis.
I talked to Graz this week. It's funny that you mentioned Graz. I talked to Graz this week. He was on our podcast, The Program, and I said, are you going to the Rose Bowl? He said, no, my couch is too good. His kids are going. He's like, we'll catch up down the road, though. We're gonna hopefully.
He keeps saving up for them. I mean, I guess, is he going to go to Atlanta for the Natty? I mean, what's he doing? He must feel pretty confident.
That's not Graz, but right. he's going down the road of, you know what, the kids will go this one, and if the Ducks can get past whoever, Ohio State or Tennessee, he's like, maybe we'll get there and we'll go to whether it's the Cotton Bowl or Atlanta, but he'll end up at one. He's at every home game, though. Graz is a great dude.
Yeah, he is.
Let's talk about this playoff, because Oregon's path is not easy by any stretch, and we get this thing going with, you know, the first round coming up this week. What did you make, though, of the bracket, the way that it broke in Oregon's path? Because it'll go through either Ohio State or Tennessee, Texas, Clemson, or Arizona State, and then, you know, potentially playing Georgia in Georgia at the end of this thing.
So I don't love it, but I'm also not that upset about it. Like, I know Joel Klatt with Fox was, like, you know, really emphatic, like, this has to be fixed. Like, and by the way, I love Dan Lanning's approach, where he's like, hey, my players, just give us a parking lot. We'll show up and play anybody. We don't care, which I do think is the right mindset. And, like, if you are the number one seed, and they are, and they've earned it, they've deserved it, it's not even close. That was, like, the one thing there was absolutely zero debate over, was who was the one seed. In a seeded tournament, it is supposed to be where you have the biggest advantage. I do think there's one thing that people are not taking into consideration, because people have talked a lot about the seeding where the 5 and the 6 seeds, you know, Texas playing against Clemson at home and Penn State playing against SMU home, and both of them are, you know, Penn State's an 8.5-point favorite, Texas a 10.5-point favorite. Like, people are saying, oh, and especially for Penn State, they're saying, what an easy path they have. They do have to play an extra game. Like, that is something I don't think people are – I think people are just glossing over the extra game. Like, what happens if Drew Aller gets hurt and, like, you're without him? Like, because you were in a football game against SMU, which, yes, you should win. But the other thing I've learned from college football this season is, like, we might think they're a 10.5-point favorite in Texas and against Clemson, but they could get beat. Like, you still are subjecting yourselves to a potential loss and an extra game. So I still think you benefit the teams that get a bye. So I think that helps. But the thing that screwed up to me is, and I apologize to Boise State fans, I feel like I've been hard on them. They have absolutely zero business being a 3 seed. And I would say probably the same for Arizona State being a 4 seed. Like, they're not, and especially Boise, like, that is a Group of 5 program. It is a different level. And I am thrilled, and I've always campaigned for a Group of 5 team to get a seat at the table. I just don't think they should be at one of the heads of the table, which is basically what they've been given. I don't think their schedule is anywhere close to what some of these other teams have faced. And I think it's unfair. And if you solve that, if you did just seed the teams or re-rank them, I know that was something Joel Klatt had said to do after the first round, I think that would make sense. But since you can't do anything about it, like, why complain about it? Which is why I love Dan Lanning's approach. Like, I've loved everything Dan Lanning has brought to Oregon, including a mindset, which I think is a championship mindset. So I think they screwed it up. I'm not that upset about it. I still think if Oregon's the best team in the country, which I do, I think they'll win it all.
Danny, when you look at this, and even if they did not get it quite right, with the way the seeding is gone, do you see any potential for there to be that Cinderella team? Does Boise State have a path? Does Indiana have a path? Like, does anybody outside of the true blue bloods or the teams that have kind of pushed their way to the top really have any kind of path that you could see where in the first year of the college football playoff, you have a team that makes it, not necessarily to even, you know, winning the title game, but even getting to the semis or making it to the title game?
Yes, I do. Now, if you had me pick one, and this is where it's kind of like the NCAA basketball tournament when you pick your bracket, like, I have two upsets happening, and it'll probably screw it up because I'll probably have the two wrong ones, right? So I have Clemson beating Texas, which ironically is the biggest point spread of the first round, and then I have Indiana beating Notre Dame. I think Indiana's probably the one I can envision doing some damage, especially – like, I think it's kind of interesting that we've just glossed over Georgia, you know, potentially losing their quarterback, Carson Beck. Like, right. Oh, it's no big deal. Like, they're still the third best odds to win the national championship. And I'm like, really? And I get he hasn't been great this season, and he's had multiple games where he's had three interceptions, and he's been a little bit up and down. But did anybody notice that Gunnar Stockton did throw a costly interception against Texas when it was 3rd and 13 and, you know, had that game in overtime because of it? Like, to me, and Georgia fans are like, they're fine with it too. Like, oh, we got our guy. Like, we love our backup. Backup's a whole different scenario. Like, we haven't seen him play very much, and there's a lot different scenario. And this is speaking to somebody who primarily was a backup throughout my NFL career. It's kind of easy to come in the game when somebody gets hurt. Like, you are thrust in there. You don't have time to get nervous. You just go out there and you just execute and you do your job. Now that you potentially have to sit on the knowledge that you're starting for 3 weeks or 2 weeks, like, that is a different animal. Like, you start to play those mind games, and you're mentally, the stress builds up and you think about it, and you can, some guys thrive under that, but some guys crater under that pressure. So that's the one unknown. But back to your question, if I had to pick one, I'd probably say Indiana. I think Indiana could beat, I actually have them beating Notre Dame. And then I could envision a scenario where if Georgia's not as dominant as they were, who's to say Indiana couldn't beat Georgia? It's wild, but we've seen Georgia play down to competition. We saw them lose to Ole Miss, you know, 28-10. And what if it's Carson Beck or the backup? Like, what if they throw some interceptions? Like, I could see that happening. And then the other team that I had winning against Texas was Clemson, and I had Clemson advancing all the way to the semis before it comes to an end against Oregon. I do have two powerhouses. I do have Oregon facing Georgia in the championship game, and I have Oregon winning it all because I do think depth matters. And while there's been a lot of parity and there's been talent spread out throughout, you know, the SEC and Big Ten and college football in general, those teams are still deeper. Like, we've seen Oregon lose a Jordan Birch for a significant portion, and it hasn't fazed them. We've seen Georgia lose Tate Ratledge, one of their best offensive linemen, for a month of the season, didn't faze them. Like, there's going to be a gauntlet that teams have to go through to win 3 or 4 games. You're going to lose guys to injury, and those are the teams that I feel are most equipped to deal with some of those guys getting hurt or just dinged up where they're not the same player and you need to rely on some depth.
Danny Cannell is our guest, courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for updated college football playoff and bowl game lines. You mentioned Georgia had the third best odds. The team that kind of surprised me is the team that you have getting upset. Texas has the best odds right now to win the championship. Is that, do you think, because largely public money's coming in, or is there really the talent, the roster? It just says Vegas is looking at it going, all right, the Longhorns are supremely talented. If they can just run the football and Quinn Ewers can at times get out of his own way, they can just have this easier path.
So I think some of it has to do with the path. That 5 seed is a sweet spot. You know, Clemson is sort of, I like Clemson because I'm probably partial to Dabo Sweeney, but they're almost playing with house money. Like, when they lost to South Carolina, they thought their season was done. And then all of a sudden they get new life and they beat a really good SMU team and pretty much handled SMU. SMU clawed their way back to make it respectable and almost get it to overtime. And I think Clemson's got like sort of that roster that can go, that has depth. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking about, like, that is a traditional blue blood. Like, they have been competitive. They haven't had a bad season the last 10 years. By their standard, they have, but they really haven't had a bad season. The analytics, like the data, the models love Texas because of their roster. Like, a lot of people have talked about Ohio State's $20 million roster. Not a lot of people have talked about Texas's $22 million roster, right? Like, that's kind of flown under the radar. And the defense has been spectacular. But I think Clemson can play them in sort of a defensive struggle type game. I like the under in that game too, by the way, in the Clemson-Texas game, probably more than the outright upset. But I like, for Texas, yes, they've got all these players, and yes, they have a lot of talent, and Quinn Ewers can be good at times, but they have not been tested. Like, I get that they finished the season with 2 losses, but the 2 losses came against really the only great team that they played against, or I would say borderline good. Like, what is their best win? Is it Vanderbilt, you know, who finished the season as, you know, bowl eligible team? It's probably Texas A&M on the road. a game which was 17-7, and like Texas A&M didn't play great in that game. I don't know. I think something's off with Quinn Ewers too. I don't know if he's 100% healthy or if it's still his ribs, like the oblique injury that's bothering, or the ankle where he's wearing that massive like ski boot for his ankle. But he just feels off, and I think they could be ripe for an upset. As much as we've talked about Ohio State and kind of the stressful environment that could be, if that game is ugly, Texas is a fan base which has high expectations. I could hear them getting a little restless, and I think Clemson is just playing with house money. They could play loose and free because nobody's picking to win, including, you know, the odds makers and the point spread. I think that game's ripe for an upset.
Former quarterback, you're the perfect person to ask about this because you mentioned the ankle, you mentioned the oblique and rib injuries to Quinn Ewers. It seemed like in the SEC championship game especially, everything was like a three ball, right? It's just kind of floating everything in there. How much is that playing in, do you think, to the ankle and oblique, and which one is the bigger injury to lead to that?
I think it's his oblique because like your ankle – you can stabilize it, and maybe it's a pain tolerance thing. And he hasn't been very mobile throughout his entire career, so it's not like you're missing much there. But the oblique is something because his ankle was recent. I think he hurt that against Kentucky. But like when I watched him play against Georgia the first time around, or when I watched him play against Vanderbilt, he just has not really let it rip. And I think he is a quarterback who comes out. I mean, he's a five-star, one of the highest touted quarterbacks coming out of high school, and we saw it last year against Alabama. We saw it even this year against Michigan, where he would stretch the field vertically. Like, they want to throw the ball deep. They are a big play offense, and yet they haven't taken many shots down the field. His average depth of target is one of the shortest in the entire country, at the power four level. Like, they don't throw it very deep, and it could be because they've had injuries at receiver. Like, Isaiah Bond, their best receiver, has been hurt. But like, Gunnar Helm, their tight end, has been their most productive receiver. And like, that's why I just have a hunch that that oblique is something that really takes a long time to heal. And it is something that you use a lot of your torso and your core when you're throwing the ball and rotating, especially when you're trying to throw it deep down the field. Like, I still have a hunch. One thing I do think could see happen, but I thought it would happen in Atlanta in the SEC championship game, but it didn't. I thought they would use Arch Manning more than they did. And I still wonder if that's something that Sark has been waiting on for the playoffs when they have to win it. Because even in the SEC championship game, you kind of know we got to win more games to win the ultimate goal. Like, I still wonder if there's an Arch Manning package where they utilize him a little bit more, especially if Quinn struggles the way he has with turnovers. I mean, he still threw for 350 against Georgia, but he had the two costly interceptions, and he missed a lot of open guys. I still wonder if Sark goes to Arch in that situation.
Danny, kind of backing it out to like 30,000 feet here, when you look at the way that the 12-team playoff is kind of as laid out, and you look at the teams that are in there and the players that are at the very top end, it feels like even 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the depth was so concentrated in a couple different teams. You know, Kirby Smart's Georgia team had, what was it, 18 guys that were just absolute dudes on that defense where you just went, yeah, that's an NFL defense. And then the next year they come back and they've got another, you know, dozen guys on that team. But with the proliferation of NIL and the kind of the diaspora of talent going out and around, do you feel like the changing of the guard in college football is finally taking place, and where the, not necessarily lack of depth, but just the spreading around of top-end talent is just more proliferate than it's ever been?
Yes, I do. I agree with you, although I don't think it'll necessarily change the national champion. Like, look at the teams we're talking about. They're still the richest programs, right? Oregon spends a lot. Texas spends a lot. Ohio State spends a lot. Georgia spends a lot. You know, like, and those are the teams that I probably, if you said those group, like, I would say probably the national champion's coming from that group of four. But what I love, there's a couple things I love. One, it gives a program like Indiana a ton of hope and, you know, and an opportunity to potentially be that Cinderella. But you know who else it gave hope to this season? A program like South Carolina, who I get they didn't get in, but they had a meaningful game in November, late November, last weekend of the season. When I say meaningful, like playoff spot on the line on the last weekend of the season. And that would also go for Miami, who got beat on that game, kept them out of the playoff. You had, you know, BYU later than ever, Iowa State playing in the Big 12 championship with a chance. That's the 18th ranked team. You know, there are so many more teams that actually feel like they have a chance. And they could get in, and even though they might not be able to run the table and win three or four games, they can still have that hope of playing for a national championship. With the 4-team playoff and even more so in the BCS, there were probably eight teams every year he said, yep, they can play for it. Anybody else, like, thanks for coming. Like, enjoy your bowl, whatever bowl it's going to be, but you have real no chance at the table. Now you've got teams with a seat at the table, and I do think we're going to see upsets at some point in the playoff. So I do think that talent has spread around a lot more than it ever has, and I do think it's great for the game that you've got, like, new players at the party. Like Tennessee, Penn State has never had a chance. They've been close, but they never had a chance to make the 14 playoff. Now they're in. They can silence a lot of critics. I think it's awesome. Boise State and Arizona State, two teams nobody saw, especially Arizona State. I mean, they were a four-win, you know, their win total was 4.5. And here they are with, you know, an opportunity to win, you know, a playoff game. And they sit and watch the first weekend. Like, those things are great for college football because now we've included the entire country, not just either the Southeast or the, you know, Big Ten country with Ohio State or Michigan. Now we've opened this thing up to an entire country, which I think is very healthy for the sport.
Danny Cannell, courtesy of our friends at Bet Online. You can hear him, Dusty and Danny, in the mornings, 6 to 9 a.m. That is 3 to 9 a.m. our time here. So, or 3 to 6 a.m. That's really early.
You might have to listen on the app. You might have to listen on the SiriusXM app.
You can also get him on the Cover 3 podcast as well,
That's right.
If the Ducks are able to win in the Rose Bowl, you guys are doing a live show from Fort Worth the day before the Cotton Bowl. So
yeah,
there's an opportunity for Duck fans to go out and watch the Cover 3 podcast. Danny, thanks for the time, man. Always appreciate it.
You guys are fantastic. Great catching up. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Danny.
There he is, Danny Cannell. Interesting stuff there, especially he's got Texas being upset by Clemson in the middle game on Saturday in Austin, where Cade Klubnik will be returning to his hometown. And that was, I remember this game because our boss, Jeff Alston, he came in and he was like, hey, Texas 6A state championship game, it's got two of the best quarterbacks in the country playing in it. And I was like, oh, yeah? And he's like, South Lake Carroll versus Westlake. And I was like, oh. Cade Klubnik versus Quinn Ewers in the 2020 state championship game in 6A.
They do call high school football down there a little bit different. Those two schools, by the way, both have stadiums that would rival most colleges in the country.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But he's got Klubnik beating Ewers in the rematch of that 2020 Texas High School State Championship game.
Hey, it's all coming up Clemson right now. They have now.
They went to the portal again. I was gonna go and tease that because Dabo Swinney is a man who is not afraid to contradict himself. Let's get to that next. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. Dabo Swinney is totally okay with being a walking, talking contradiction. We know this about him. He said the day that college players get paid is the day he's going to go and find something new to do. Well, he's still coaching. He's actually coaching in the college football playoff this Saturday. Like 48 hours from now, he will be coaching a football game in Austin, Texas in the college football playoff. He also said the portal isn't something that they're going to use, and they will not utilize it. Well,
about that.
Yep. We now have two.
The seal has broken.
Portal entries.
Not one, but two.
To Clemson University. The first one was a wide receiver from, I think it was Southwest Missouri State, who they're like, yep. I'm going to go ahead and swoop him up. But this one is a big one and of consequence. Southeast Missouri State wide receiver Tristan Smith that they got. Today, Dabo added the first ever defensive transfer via the portal. And he's actually going to be a dude, and he's going to be a player. They got Will Helt, the defensive end from Purdue. He's a player, man.
What, could you say he might help?
He will do that.
Really, just one letter off being a fantastic name.
He's going to have to use that to run for Congress someday, right? Or something. Mm-hmm. Local political office. Mm-hmm.
Help for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He will do it.
Mm-hmm. See, there we go. You got it.
Yeah, yuck it up.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah. It's, oh, God. I wouldn't vote for him just for that reason.
Well, could be somewhere in the South.
Could be the best candidate. But it's an exodus out of Purdue. Dylan Thienemann came to Oregon, the safety, just basically portal opened, and he was like, yep.
See you later, bye.
And now Will Helt is headed to Clemson. Dabo, he may be corny. He's no dummy.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I guess I'll do it.
Well, he knows that in this landscape, this is how he's going to have to win. If he wants to cash the $11 million a year check that he gets from Clemson.
And not have to give $4.5 million of it back to compensate.
Like Mike Norvell. Look, you get the portal is an asset. And I think there's so many coaches that refuse to adapt and change with the times. Right? We talked about this with the youth movement in the college football playoff. And you look at the personalities. And Dabo is a dynamic personality that can still relate to young people.
He's also one of only three active coaches with a ring.
He is also a guy that will adapt. He always has. And it can be a walking, talking contradiction.
Do what he does, not watch what he does, not what he says.
But at the same time, he's also going to adapt with the times, and he is going to find a way to win because he's a competitive SOB. He's not a guy that could jump to the NFL and people would be like, yeah, that works in the NFL. Dabo would get eaten alive in the National Football League. But he is an incredible college coach because he's a leader of young men. And, you know, you may not buy what he's selling, but what he sells, it works at the college level. And as long as you're willing to adapt, you're going to be able to survive. And what we are seeing is Dabo Swinney is adapting to this current age of college football.
And you know,
no doubt about it.
It's do what you got to do. It's survive or die.
Yep.
It's really what it comes down to.
Nick Saban didn't want to do that.
No.
I mean, and he was like, I have nothing else to prove. I don't want to live this life. I'm out.
And you can't go see him go be a coordinator somewhere like Chip did.
And I don't blame him for it.
No.
Well, and Nick Saban doesn't want to give up the hot tub time because that's daddy time.
Exactly. It is daddy time.
Daddy time.
It is daddy time.
So
no eating in the house.
You know, we talked about ownership in sports and things going wrong. Did you see what happened with the Charlotte Hornets the other day?
Okay. I saw this story, but I didn't ever get any details about this story.
Okay.
They wronged a child.
They wronged apparently. A child. Yes. Okay. The Charlotte Hornets have wronged a child.
All right.
They're trying to make it right, but is it too late? We'll get to that in our worst day on the web. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with the Sports Center update.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
It's time for today's worst day on the web with Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
Speaking of terrible ownership and making bad decisions, poor choices.
Does Woody Johnson own the Hornets?
No, they've actually been recently sold. Remember, Michael Jordan sold off his majority shares and new ownership took over and brought in a new front office, a new
coaching
staff.
Michael Jordan would never do this.
No, he wouldn't. And what happened, did you suppose? Well, they did a timeout bit where they had Hugo the Hornet, that's the big stuffed Hornet mascot, one of the best-looking mascots in sports.
Great mascot.
It's a fantastic mascot. But apparently that mascot is cheap. As they brought a kid down from the stands for a Christmas-themed celebration where he was basically Hugo the Santa.
Yes.
And, you know, I asked the kid who kind of what he wanted, and then it turns out, oh, I've got what you want here in this bag, a PlayStation 5.
Well, it's actually, this is multiple kids they did this to.
Mm.
Multiple kids were brought down as part of like a Hugo Santa bit, and they didn't tell any of the kids that it was a bit and that they weren't going to keep anything. So the first kid goes out and they give him a custom autographed exclusive branded Miller autographed jersey.
Mm.
Okay. Kid walks off. And they say, yeah, no, that's ours. We're taking that back. Kid starts crying, like just waterworks immediately. And so they have to, they're like, okay, you could just keep it. Next kid, something else. Kid doesn't cry. They take the gift though. Third kid, and this is according to apparently one of the parents, had text with this guy who is the uncle of the kid who got the PS5 taken away. So I'm assuming that this is the mother of the child that got the PS5. She said, we didn't know what was going on until like 30 seconds before we walked out on the court. The last kid was was like a skit, but the first two were not. And we didn't even know what was going on with the last kid when we walked out. They did like a whisper to me that they wouldn't get to keep whatever they got, but they didn't tell the kids this. The first kid got a Christmas-themed Brandon Miller jersey, and they tried to take that away, and he started crying. They ended up giving it to him. The cheerleader who was with us had no idea we had to give the PS5 back, so she started getting Jack excited about it and asking if he wanted to keep the bag and everything that and everything like that. And this guy just like came up and was trying to take it away, and the cheerleader and others thought he was joking, so it got super awkward.
Good gravy.
So nobody knew. So I'm assuming Hugo the Hornet didn't know, because the cheerleaders who were accompanying the kids out on the court
didn't know.
They had no idea. Apparently, right as the kids were walking out, somebody comes up to the parents and is like, they're not going to get to keep this. And then you send your kid out.
Who thought it was a good idea to do this?
Why are you?
What the hell is going on?
Why are you doing any of this?
Yes. Yeah, so what would get into your brain to make you think this is a good idea?
Yeah. Well, what was the point outside of faking everybody else in the arena? Which the Hornets are dreadful. So it probably wasn't even a sold out arena.
No.
The outside of getting those 13,000 people, maybe. To go, hey,
they hook some kids up.
We're giving all these kids all this great stuff and making other kids in the arena jealous for not getting picked. What was the point?
Strategery.
So PS5 retails, I think, for $4.99 right now, and the jersey it's having your player sign it. It's nothing. That's part of cost of doing business. Yeah. If you've ever been to Media Day. For any team, you should see the tables of merchandise that are laid out that each player has to sign. It is tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of merchandise. I'm talking entire rooms that are bigger than most people's houses, filled with stuff that they are giving away.
Do you think we'll ever get one of these from the Charlotte Hornets? Do you think we'll ever get one of these from the Charlotte Hornets?
It was me!
Well, no. They kind of did, but they even went just stupidly corny in their statement that they ended up releasing. Listen to how dumb this sounds. This is a statement directly from the Hornets. During last night's game, there was an on-court skit that missed the mark. You think?
What was the skit part of it?
That we're lying about giving cool stuff to kids? Okay, Grinch. Also, missed the mark? Your PR team needs to do, like, there's no responsibility taken in this. It missed the mark. What mark? Tell me what is the mark that you're trying to hit?
Well, I think
I've made a huge mistake.
I think the marks are the kids in this, but it's more of like a criminal mark.
Then it goes further. The skit included bad decision-making and poor communication. No, it was in poor taste. Yeah. That's what it was.
I think
you
the poor decision-making is they hit the nail on the head there.
Simply put, we turn the ball over and we apologize.
Oh, they got cute.
Throw me into traffic.
Yeah, they got cute.
Oh, no! We suck again!
Poor decision-making and poor communication, the 2024 Charlotte Hornets. But is the poor communication the fact that they didn't say immediately, hey, you're going to go on court for an on-court promotion. We're going to give you something and you don't get to keep it. But we're going to pretend like we're giving it to you. Is that the poor communication? Because that's a poor decision, too. And golly, the Hornets. See, Blazer fans, you don't have it that bad. If the Blazers don't even bring the kids down to give that stuff away. If they were to bring the kids down to give that stuff away, they'd actually get to keep it.
Well, you know the only way the Hornets make this right?
Pay that man his money.
They are. They're giving him the PS5.
They
He's
should.
He's getting the PS. He should get games too. He should get all the games.
Yeah.
And he should get another. They all should
like
get
a year
everything.
Or two subscription to whatever live service.
They should get the Brandon Miller jerseys. They need to make this right in a big way. The VIP experience to a game. Yeah, I think that is at the very least something you can do because that costs the team. Nothing.
Zero. That's the bare minimum right there.
Nothing.
That is the bare minimum.
Wow. That's brutal, dude.
We've reached out to the family, committed to not only making it right, but exceeding expectations. We were providing the fan with a PS5 that he should have taken home along with a VIP experience to a future game. Our goal is and will remain to elevate the guest experience for every person in our Spectrum Center and to show our fans how much we appreciate their relentless support.
I mean, when you have Encore giveaways like that, it doesn't make like a $15 beer seem that bad. You know? You know? I mean, that's robbery. This is like manipulating and crushing the soul of a kid.
See, what I want to see,
PS5 for a kid is a huge deal.
Oh, it's
too
huge. What I want to see is all these kids get that prize that they were awarded, and then when it comes down to the VIP or experience of the game, just say,
screw you guys, I'm going home.
Yeah.
I'll take my PS5. Thank you very much.
Or maybe like a public shaming of the employee who came up with the idea.
There we go. Yeah. Like a caning.
The thing that is incredible about this that any of these promotions, there are so many levels and conversations and dumb meetings that
how
they have to pass.
Do they have to go through?
They're like, yeah, this is a good idea. They're like, but we don't have to give anything away, actually. They're like, yes,
somebody
we are in. Let's trick the children.
Somebody galaxy brained this so freaking hard. It speaks so drastically ill of the people in the decision-making process.
And so many people had to approve it.
They're going to be on the naughty list.
I'll
tell you that right meow.
The whole idea of like, hey, we need to make cuts. Ticket. You know what we should do? We should make children feel our pain instead.
Yeah. Michael Jordan would never.
He would never even think to.
Who bought that team?
I can't remember. That's two guys that bought the majority share from him.
Yeah. And they had they didn't do anything for this.
Because Jordan bought it from the BET dude, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob, who named the team the Bobcats.
Yeah. Which, hey, after him, I mean, you know.
Gabe Plotkin and Rick Plotkin. Schnall.
Yeah.
They own it.
Yeah. I think they have an investment portfolio.
Right? Melvin Capital and owner of the Atlanta Hawks, who sold off his minority share to become an owner. So two very wealthy people that probably are looking at all of this bad PR and going, $500?
Yeah.
This was over $500?
Are you kidding me?
I wiped my butt with $500. The old
this
Gabe
Plotkin. This is why there's stuff like this. It's always better. It's always better to just take care of people.
Yeah.
It's always like the negative PR that they are getting and got from this is so drastically overwhelming.
Yeah. And so it's not even about that. It was just such horrific decisions that got approved by so many people
on so many levels.
But what does that also tell you about the culture within that organization that all these people approved it and thought it was funny and not a horrific decision?
And beyond that,
what culture?
Yeah. That not only that, beyond that, the PR statement getting cheeky, we turn the ball over.
Yeah.
Oh, and at zero point in time, do they actually accept real culpability or responsibility?
It's my feelings.
It's dismissive the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, these are in all reality, though, these are things that get people fired. And this is why you get, like, I am not for, like, people should lose their jobs.
No.
This is a very bad decision, and you should not be in the role that you are
in. This is like almost an entire department that should be scrapped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't forget.
Todd Bosma would never let this
God,
happen.
God, no.
Oh, no.
Look.
Blazer Todd would never let
this
happen.
I have said this a million times, and I've told Todd to his face. Todd is, like, if once you've been to 10, 15, 20 arenas in the NBA, and you see how other teams do their stuff, and, like, the other hosts, and Todd is the best.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, he gets...
That's why he's been there forever.
27 years, something like that.
He does All-Star games.
He goes to All-Star games. He is the guy that the NBA brings in because he's that good at it.
Yeah.
Like, when you go to games and you hear these other people, you're like, oh my God, this is so corny. This is so bad. It's all like, ha-ha, all right, let's go do this.
Yeah, Blazer Todd, I feel like if this were to happen at a Blazer game and the Blazers pulled this on kids,
Todd
with the amount that Todd... like, we'll poke fun at people in the tic-tac-toe game and just be like, really? Wow.
That's choice?
Yeah. That, I think he would be the one ripping the organization for doing the tricking of children.
If security came to rip the PS5 away, Todd would rip it back.
I'm pro Blazer Todd.
Yes.
We're lucky to have Todd Bosma.
Todd is quite literally goated at what he does. There is no doubt about it. We talked about the Clemson transfers. Oregon doing pretty well.
Yeah, they've paid. It was a busy day yesterday, that's for sure.
Dan Lanning using the tweets, putting the Ducks up on the board. We'll get to that and more. Come up here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan. It's those dang hippopotamuses and horchata. What you guys heard still to these days, maybe it's because I looked at the lyrics when I was a kid.
I'm sorry. Don't tell me you don't hear horchata in there.
Yeah, you.
I do now after you guys said
or hippopotamus.
You're lying.
Yeah.
You're lying.
I never.
Yeah.
I don't know. Dabo and the Clemson Tigers, they're new to the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. Oregon Ducks, not so much.
No.
And they do pretty damn well there.
Yeah, they dipped into it quite often. I think it was 14 last year. And you look at the guys that have come in, and this is what the portal does. The portal is to fill holes until your roster in the homegrown guys is developed. And the reality of it is that the world of recruiting, you hit, but you miss a lot more than you hit. And it isn't just player development, because there isn't a single program in the country that develops 100% of their players. And the world of college football, when we see numbers like 2,900 guys in the transfer portal, it is guys looking for better opportunities for themselves. But there's also coaches saying, hey, this isn't working. And either our roster is at a level to where we don't think that you can develop into one of those guys, and we are targeting other guys that are going to come in and compete, you may want to look for greener pastures. That is a majority of those 2,900 guys is coaches. And if you have a healthy culture and good communication between your players and their position coaches, coordinators, and head coach, there is an open, honest conversation about where a player is and how they fit. And, you know, you see the mass exodus when players don't buy what the coach is selling them. And, or there is a, no, we're just going to bring in everybody in the hard ass way. Well, Oregon, you look at the guys that they brought in just this year alone, Dylan Gabriel, Jabbar Muhammad, Kobe Savage. These guys have been absolutely massive this year alone via the portal. Over the last couple of years, Johnny Cornelius out of Rhode Island. You've got Tysheem Johnson, Trayshawn Holden, Tez Johnson. I mean, there's been a lot of guys that Oregon has plugged those holes where they have built a team that is the number one seed in 13-0 and the only unbeaten in college football. The portal is wildly important, but you also need to be able to build through recruiting, and that's why you see such an emphasis by the elite programs. And Oregon ended up having, what, the number three class, or two class nationally, composite three, which did take a hit today because Dallas Wilson, the five-star receiver out of Tampa, Florida, remember they got like the number one and two receivers. Yep. DeCorian Moore, he is still on en route to Oregon. But on signing day, Dallas Wilson, there was that he's going to flip to Florida. Well, today he has asked for his release from his letter of intent and will be going to Florida. Things like that happen, sure. Right? But the last 24 hours have been really good for Oregon in the portal because they've got holes to fill. You look at Josh Connerly, gone. You know,
it's his NFL dude.
Yeah. Johnny Cornelius, gone. Yep. Eligibility up. And so there's a void at tackle. And what they did is they went out and they got Isaiah World, a 6'8", 300-pound tackle out of Nevada.
I mean, the Ducks bought by the pound because the three guys that they brought in, yep, the two tackles and the tight end. You talk about World, 6'8", 300 pounds. Alex Harkey, 6'6", 300 pounds.
And he's a Texas State transfer, Harkey is, mm-hmm, and he is a massive human being. And look, it becomes a numbers game on, mm-hmm, you bring guys in, you see which ones, the fight to develop on guys that are on the roster, and for these guys to come in, can you beat out the guys we already have here, yep, because they're trying to build depth? You look at it, it's worked out for Oregon this year with just the way that the O-line has had to be shuffled around this year with Kavika Rogers injured early, Dave Iuli injured early. You had also Marcus Harper and Nashad Strother. Mm-hmm. The depth of the offensive line has been tested for Oregon. And we saw when Poncho was able to move back to center, that's when everything cleared
solidified
up. And Bedford, who was the Indiana transfer that everybody had high hopes for coming into this year, being the starter, and he's been injured twice this year, he's going to have the opportunity to be back on this team too.
No, I mean, and then you throw in the tight end transfer who popped up from Louisville, 6'5", 265.
Yeah, Jamari Johnson, and this is going to be an interesting position to look at because you lose Terrence Ferguson and Patrick Herbert this year on the roster already. You have Kenyon Sadiq. Freak. Saw that in the Big Ten championship game. And then Roger Sapialaga, who is a true freshman out of Utah, who is a guy that they're very high on. He's not redshirting this year. He's played a majority of his snaps on special teams. But he's going to be a guy that they feel very comfortable with, both Roger and Kenyon heading into next year. But we see how many sets that Oregon uses their tight ends in, right? 13 personnel is not something that is unfamiliar to Oregon, which is one back and three tight ends. And we have seen Sadiq, Ferg, and Herbert on the field at the same time. They need depth at that position.
And how they deploy them, because they're all very different. You know, we were talking on Friday at the Radio Row with Jones about how Kenyon Sadiq is just a freak of an athlete. You know, he joked about how can that brother be from Idaho, you know, like the whole idea of like where does an athlete like that come out of a place like that? Well, I mean, Jamari Johnson is not that type of dude. He's a massive human. And like so when you have those different, you know, versatile type players of how you're going to deploy them, where you're going to deploy them, that's it's more game planning. It's more things. It's more wrinkles. It's more ways to utilize guys.
There is a really interesting thing at play with Oregon as well, in that they had four position groups where they do need to reload. Right? Corner, where you're losing a ton of guys. Safety. Your back end of your defense, you are losing a lot in the back end of the defense. Offensive tackle and tight end. Those four position groups are the priority. We're sitting here on December 19th, and Oregon has picked up Dylan Thienemann from Purdue at safety,
who I believe is the top-rated safety in the transfer class.
Deron Johnson, the corner, all Big Ten corner out of Northwestern. The two tackles we just talked about, and a tight end. It is. They're not waiting around and sitting back and waiting to see. They have been proactive as they're having this time off. And look, make no mistake about it, having a first round bye, and this may only be an advantage unique to this year, having this first round bye while the portal is open and as active as it is right now, that's a big advantage for Oregon too, is that they can continue recruiting as they're, you know, fine-tuning things, self-scouting, advanced scouting, one of two potential opponents for the Rose Bowl coming up. This is where it's not just getting healthy, it's hitting the pavement and trying to find how you improve next year's roster after the early signing period right before the Big Ten championship game.
It's a good spot to be.
Yep.
That's why it's always better to not play the extra game.
Yeah, outside of the 75 to 100 snaps, you're saving your guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Mildly helpful.
Useful.
All right, coming up next, it's Thursday afternoon. It's 2 o'clock, which means it's time for us to make our picks, our Stone Cold Lead Pipe locks for the weekend coming up in the NFL here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.